I want to first start now with a function which we call Krishna Lila Smaranam. We have started with this in other temples, where we invite devotees to just talk about Krishna. I'm hearing that Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj is coming any moment to join us. And then the great soul Krishna, etc., will soon come from the ocean of all causes and also join us. He's at this moment still overcoming the waves. I thought I would start by singing a very nice song which Syama Priya will reveal to you. Yes, here or there. Where should it go, Syama Priya? This song is a song from the different names of Krishna, which Gokumar chanted just before he went home back to Godhead. I think all of you know Gokumar is a soul on its way back home, back to Godhead. And he came to Vrindavan and began singing the different names of Lord Krishna, which are here, and which we will sing. Hopefully we will also one day go to Goloka Vrindavan, and maybe we will chant at that time those holy names. Samapriya, I need my book back. Did I please put them on the page where this is? It's a two beat. Ding, 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 ding. That's a challenge for you. Just go bang, bang. Just very uncomplicated and unsophisticated. Sri Krishna Gopala Hare Mukunda Govinda He Nanda Kishora Krishna Sri Krishna Jamashtami Ki Jai. Radha Kunya Bihari Ki Jai. Gaur Premanandi Hari Hari Bo. Please repeat after me. These are the translations of the different words. Sri Krishna. Sri Krishna. Gopala. Gopala. Hare. Lord Hari. Mukunda. Mukunda. Govinda. Hey. Oh. Nanda. For Nanda. Kishore. Zone. Nanda Kishore means Sin Pa Nanda. Krishna. Ha. Oh. Sri Yashoda. Of Yashoda. Tanaya. The sun. Prasida. Please be merciful. Sri Balavi. Of the gopis. Jivan. The life. Radhika. Of Radhika. Isha. The Lord. This means O Sri Krishna Gopal Hari Mukunda Govinda. O son of Nanda Maharaj. O Krishna. O son of Yashoda. Life of the gopis and Lord and Master of Radhika. Please give me your mercy. Today is Jamashtami and we are trying to remember Krishna. This particular part of our Jamashtami program is called the Leela Smaranam program. That is, we try to remember Krishna. I would like to tell you today one Leela which is belonging to my favorite Leelas, because it is very relevant for my own life in Krishna consciousness. Amongst Krishna's many pastimes of subduing the demons, his pastimes of delivering the Kaliya snake is very relevant. Jiva Goswami, no, sorry, Rupa Goswami describes a little bit about the Kaliya pastime by quoting the following prayer. Oh my Lord, I do not think that your pastime of subduing the Kaliya demon should just be limited to that one time where you danced on the hooves of Kaliya. Oh my Lord, I must tell you that in the lake of my heart there is a snake which is much more dangerous than the Kaliya snake. This snake is called enviousness. Enviousness towards you, my Lord, and your devotees. I have only one chance. If you kindly come into my heart and find the snake of envy and then jump on his head and dance on the hoofs of the head, this will be my only chance. With this prayer, Rupa Goswami opens a curtain which may have been closed and shows us one dimension in Krishna Leela which is not so frequently understood. It's a dimension which we must be very careful about, but which we have to also know. It is what we can call in the academic language the figurative dimension. Figurative means you tell something and that means something else. Hare Krishna.
Oh.
Please, yes, give it. Hare Krishna. No, no, it is, we are very lucky that you have come. Prabhupada has warned us many times to not think that the pastimes of the Lord mean something else than what is explained in them. Srila Prabhupada especially often mentioned the foolish interpretation of the Bhagavad Gita, where the battle of Kurukshetra is no longer a battlefield, and the Pandavas are no longer real people, and the arrows are no longer real arrows. Mahatma Gandhi has given such an explanation, and he has certainly not pleased Srila Prabhupada with it. Prabhupada said, no, it is not that the battlefield of Kurukshetra is the battlefield of life, and that Krishna is the Jiva and the Pandavas are the five senses. Everything is to be taken literally. So when you will now hear about the figurative understanding of Krishna Leela, please do not forget that the Leela which we will tell you now took place just the way you it is narrated in Krishna books. But while listening to this, you can do a little spiritual therapy. That is, you can understand that when Krishna jumps on the head of the demon Kaliya and tramples it with his sweet lotus feet and finally subdues Kaliya, you can pray to Lord Krishna to come in the same way into the lake of your heart and find this dangerous snake of envy. And then jump on it and subdue it. You can meditate like this. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains that a devotee takes this particular lila of Lord Krishna and then prays to Lord Krishna, so please come in the heart and crush that anatta of enviousness, our main anatta. Alright, so now we start. Once a many-hooded serpent called Kalia entered the river Yamuna in Vrindavan, and by some mystical potency whereby which you use water to construct buildings, he actually built a palace underneath the surface of the Yamuna river. Kalia was very dangerous. He produced the most powerful of poisons, which soon began to transform the river Yamuna into the, what we could call in modern terms, the most ecologically ruined river in this universe. It is described that constantly poisonous vapors, that is like fog or came out of the river, and if a bird would by chance fly over this broth, you can say this broth, and inhale this vapor, he would immediately die. This is how poisonous the river Yamuna became due to the poison in Kalia's fangs. Now what? So once it so happens that Krishna brought his cowherd friends and the cows, like every day, to the bank of the Yamuna, and they immediately began to drink the crystal, the formerly crystal clear waters of the Yamuna. And when they were drinking this poisonous broth, they immediately died and fell down on the banks of the Yamuna in a lifeless way. Krishna looked at his friend. And this is a very important part of the pastime. When Krishna looked at them, he revived them just by glancing at them. Have you heard some other ways what happens when Krishna glances? Yeah. After the forest fire, he looked on the friends and he revived them to life just by looking at them. When Lord Nityananda, who is no one else than Lord Balaram, looks at people, he just by looking gives prema. The demon Agasura, what did he the coward boys had been and cows had entered the stomach of Agasura and were laying there lifelessly, and then Krishna glanced above them. Bhakti Chitta Maharaj says that by glancing, Lord Vishnu impregnates the jivas into the world. By glancing, Krishna accepts our prasadam, which our bhoga, which we offer to him. Krishna's glance is royally special. Sometimes in this world we say, he killed me with his glance of rejection. Or there are movies where the heroine sits near the ocean and then turns around and glances at the poor lieutenant, and he cannot forget it for the rest of the life, the glance, and one day wants to meet the heroine. It's not a movie, it's classical world literature. But Krishna's glance is so so wonderful that in Vaishnav poetry we have several poems, the Krishna Kripa Katha Shastava, just addressing the glance of Lord Krishna. The more famous poem is the Radha Kripa Katha Shastava, which the whole of Vrindavan chants during the month of Kartik. Munindra Vrindavanite Triloka Shoka Harini Prasanna Vakta Pankate Nikunya Bhuvilasini. And it goes on in a beautiful prayer where it says Triloka Shoka Harini. Radharani can free the three lokas, the three planetary systems, with all the miseries, just by kripa kataksha bhajanam, by throwing her merciful glance in that direction. Krishna's glance is very powerful. If Krishna would just look at you one time, perfect. That's why when we come to the deities, we want to be seen by Krishna. The idea is not so only that we see Krishna, but the idea is that we come to our deities and are seen by them, because this powerful glance of the Lord will impregnate us against many evil things yet to come, or the disturbing things yet to come. So Krishna revived his cowherd boyfriends and the cows just by glancing at them in a merciful fashion. And then he decided to go into action and kill the demon Kaliya. It is described he went on the last remaining tree there. The tree was in blossom. Because he was meant to do that service. And then on the top of the tree, Krishna bound his waist belt like a wrestler does, and then jumped into the lake which had been created in the midst of the Yamuna River. Then he jumped. He who is the source of all the universes created such a momentum and stir in the waters of the Yamuna that the Yamuna flooded the shores for a distance of 100 bow lengths. You have a proper bow, almost as high as a man, so 100 of such bow lengths were flooded by Lord Krishna jumping into the Yamuna. He's heavy. Not light. This moving of the Yamuna highly disturbed the Kaliya demon. I remember once I was going into a, there was a small, like a swimming pool, a sulfur bath, and I had some problem which could only be cured with this. So I was very enthusiastic, and it was my brahmachari time. I took a big, run, and then I jumped like a banana, this is a certain jump style, into the swimming pool. And there were all these people who were lying there for pure, and they were all waving back and forth, and they began to curse me and say, "Don't think because you're young you can be impolite, young man." They were very disturbed. It's very offensive when you jump into a swimming pool, where peaceful swimmers are, small pool, and they all begin to dance up and down in the waves. So when Lord Krishna jumped with all his weight into the Yamuna, the whole situation was disturbed. The whole magical palace, which was constructed with the art of binding water into forms, was disturbed, and Kaliya went like a, not like a lotus flower, but like some weed, up and down, and he was thinking, who
Who has dared to enter into my domain? He came out like, out of the water. You know, psychology knows that the deepest fear of a swimmer is that a shark will come out of the artery and eat his leg. Maybe sometimes you have this fear when you bathe. It's an unreasonable fear, but it is there. Somehow it's one of the fears which are embedded in the human brain, the neurotic ones. So Kaliya arose like the most dangerous beast out of the water with many different hoofs, and he began to spit poison. Look, who is it who has dared to disturb my situation and challenge me? And he saw how Krishna smilingly was enjoying himself bathing in the Jamuna. Ah, this was enough. He jumped at Krishna. Now at this moment, when the beast began to jump with his whole weight on Krishna to kill him, bad omens came. Stars started to fall down from the sky. People started to lament. The left side started to pain in men and tremble. And it was a very, very bad. The people in Vrindavan looked at these omens and didn't know what to make out of them. The earth seemed to shake when the demon was jumping at Krishna in the water. This moment, when they were just speculating what had happened, an old man who had done some service at the bank of the Yamuna came running toward Vrindavan village and described, "Oh no, oh no, bad news, bad news. Our Kanai, our Krishna, is in the fangs of the dangerous Kaliya demon." It was, you know, the snake body of Kaliya was ferocious. Imagine a snake which is from here to this particular tree. Can you imagine this? The snake will have a body big like this. Now imagine the distance of 10 times this distance. A snake like this with a huge body like the tent here. The snake was kilometer long had many, many heads. Jayapataka Maharaj once told me that there was a snake with seven heads or so in Mayapur, and it was coming and taking Gurukul children who were bathing in the Ganga, and finally he had to take a shotgun and just fire at the snake, and in this way make clear to him that better go from here. It's not nice for you, it's not nice for us here. Yes, the Kaliya snake was very, very ferocious and very... I think we can't imagine, only in a nightmare, if you are a very creative dreamer, you could imagine such a being. Krishna allowed himself to be captured by the coils of the Kaliya demon, and when the Vrishabhasis were coming to the side of the Yamuna, they saw that there Krishna was in a very dangerous situation. Mother Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj immediately wanted to enter the waves of the Yamuna River to save Krishna. But Krishna Balaram could barely keep them and said, "No, no, no, don't worry. He's Krishna. No problem for him." But Yashoda wanted, "I want to die with my son. I want to die with my Krishna." Anyways, they all got them somehow out of the Yamuna, and then they fainted, seeing that, and Krishna was just there, smiling. He was there like a very dramatic actor who lets the drama increase in momentum and waits until everyone just goes mad. And this is what happened. They were all falling down unconscious at the bank of the Yamuna, and in the last moment Balaram shouted to them, "This is not a play. See your nice devotees here. They are dying looking at you. Please, now start your leela." Krishna just smiles. It's very important. Krishna always smiles even when we have nothing to smile. Krishna is always transcendental. When Arjuna lamented, you know, "Oh no, look at who's fighting with me," Krishna just smiled. Krishna is totally transcendental. Finally he saw there was nothing, everyone was dying, and he just broke free from the coils. Kaliya had no chance. He jumped on the hood of Kaliya and began to dance. This tundurum, a very special dance, I've forgotten the name of it. He began to dance. This was how it happened. Listen to the glories of Krishna's dance. One hood came up to bite Krishna, but whenever Krishna saw it, he playfully jumped on that hood, started to dance and push it down. Bang, bang, bang. You have seen the dancer, Kahalakanta has danced. Have you noticed that before she started to dance, she took her hands like this on the floor and then touched her eyes? Have you noticed this typical dancer? Do you know what it means? With Mother Earth, "I will now start to kick you. Please, it is only for the pleasure of it's only for art's sake. If it's a religious dance, it's only for Krishna's sake. Please forgive me." It's a tremendous, something happens. It's almost like a kung fu kicker, you know, the way these Bharatanatyam dancers dance. Very good. So Krishna danced like this, and with his dancing steps, he crushed the head of the many heads of the Kaliya demon. Taram, taram, taram. And the demigods thought, "This is art. This is the best art." They came with their midangas. Taram, taram, taram. And they took their karatas. Taram, taram, taram. This was a very gross form of a helpless speaker who needs to inspire a stupid audience. But it was much more beautiful than this. The dance was very, very beautiful. Then, in a gesture of great artistry, Lord Krishna waved towards the gopis and invited them all to come and join him for the dance. But this was unseen, was not seen by the other members of the Vrindavan village. Have you ever seen when Bhakti Thira Maharaj is dancing, he will wave towards us and we should now also dance? This movement Krishna made. "Come, please dance, please." And he performed even the most dangerous, existence-threatening situation, a fight with a multi-headed, multi-dimensional demon into a dance. No problem for him. He is transcendental. Then he danced for a while, and finally he crushed the demon Kaliya, and he was then told by the demon Kaliya understood, "Well, this is God who is on my head. I better surrender now." And he came and offered his prayers. The reason why he could understand that it was Krishna is because his wife, the Nagapatnis, were devotees since a long time of Lord Krishna. And because they had often prayed for their husband to one day develop a sense of surrender to Krishna. And because he was always associated with the demon, with his wife, he understood, this is Krishna, I better surrender now. And he became surrendered. So when Krishna told him, you please go from here, don't disturb in Vrindavan, and gave him a residence of what is now the Fiji Island. So, this is a leela of Lord Krishna. Devotees like to meditate about this. They like to visualize or envision the snake of envy in their own srittas, in their own heart, and they like to pray to Lord Krishna, who is known as Kaliya Daman, who dances with abundance and artistic mastery of the fine arts of music and dance, that he may kindly come on the into their hearts and destroy this demon of enviousness. Because today is Jamashtami, and Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj has allowed me to talk a little Leela Katha, I will use this opportunity shamelessly, we still have time, by telling you something which I heard from a very reliable source. When we talk about Krishna, we must talk about his devotees. The foremost devotee of Lord Krishna is Srimati Radharani. I will tell you now a story where Krishna himself brings out the glory of Srimati Radharani. Once there was a Brahmana in Haridwar who was a Unglücksrabe. What is a Unglücksrabe? This is a German word which describes a very unfortunate person by comparing him with a raven, a black raven. A misfit. No, misfit, not totally misfit. He had good qualities, but nothing worked for him. And finally, he didn't even have his economic situation intact. So he thought, I'm living here in Hartwa, I'm begging, but no one gives me something. I go to Vrindavan. I've heard this is a land where all desires are fulfilled. Maybe I can survive there. So he came to Vrindavan. But also everything in Vrindavan went wrong for him. I want to prepare all of you. When you go to Vrindavan, it can sometimes happen to you that you are not always making the best realizations and all meeting the best situations. The first year I came, or the first time I personally came to Vrindavan was where I got the most heavy cultural shock in the universe. And finally, I was very young, maybe 18 years, I was only sitting in one room, and I was here, I needed to be there in order to be close to the bathroom, and I was just hanging around with 10 other German brahmacharis. We were looking at us at with hollow eyes, and all our subject matter was not Krishna Katha, but German bread Katha. I would give my life, we would say, to eat a nice slice of German bread without any bacillus, which will make diarrhea, and with lots of butter. He said, one brahmacharya said, "This is you don't know anything about sense verification. Cheese must be on top of this. Then only it is." The other said, "Finally, we get some serious subject matter here." And we began to fantasize. Really, at the end of our Vrindavan stay, we were so unspiritual, and we were only thinking of German bread and butter. It was embarrassing to talk about it, but it is a fact. Many get a very high cultural shock and can't function in that new and a totally different environment than they are accustomed to. So this Brahmana was in a similar situation. It was too hot, the water was too salty, but he kept on going nice. He could go on Madhukari, and people gave him something, and he was ready to tolerate everything until one day his full plate of Madhukari, that means what he had begged, was stolen by a little boy. Then he said, "It's too much! Brahmanas want to eat. It's too much! How, Krishna, can you allow this? I'm coming to your place. I want to take shelter, but all you do is give me a difficult time. Don't you say in your own book, Bhagavad Gita, Savaranam Parijaja, I'm doing that. You have promised you would take care of those who surrender to you. Why do you give me this trouble? And I wouldn't mind all the other trouble, but that you stole away my plate is just too much." At this moment, one Brahmana passed by and he said, "Cool down, cool down. What is it? What is this? I have serious complaints about Krishna. My religious conviction is at stake." The Brahmana said, "Cool down, cool down. Krishna is not as influential here in Vrindavan as the queen of Vrindavan, Vrindavaneshwari. Why don't you write a letter of complaint to her and she will take care? If Radharani denies to see Krishna, Krishna is powerless. He sits at Radhakund and cries and offers flowers to the Kund to get the darshan of Srimati Radharani. He is totally dependent on her good wishes. She is the king here. She was crowned the king. Jiva Goswami has mentioned this in Madhava Mahotsava. So this is okay," said the Brahmana. "Thank you very much. I'm going to do this." And he started to write this letter of complaint. Complaint. In this place called Vrindavan lives a person who doesn't keep his word. His name is Krishna. Not only does he not keep his word to take care of his surrendered souls, he troubles them. And then he was writing, continuing. At this moment when he had ended the word, "he troubles them," he saw the same boy who had stolen his plate. This boy, this time, did not look very enthusiastic. He looked very frightened. And he said, "What are you writing? No need to write. Here is your plate, and I have just taken it to get some extra amount of sweets. Take it, eat it, be happy." And one thing, please, this letter of complaint. "How did you know I'm writing a letter of complaint?" Don't ask. This letter of complaint, just please, don't give it to Radharani. I can't explain more." And the boy disappeared. "Strange," says the Brahmana. "Anyways, I have written a letter. I'm a man who is true to his intentions. I have to deliver it. And anyways, Krishna is cruel. So, now where to deliver it?" He went to another Brahmana and said, I have a letter to Radharani. Where should I go?" Said the Brahmana, "You go to Vashana, that's where Radharani resides, and you go to this Kishori Kund. There is her priest, and you give the letter to him, and he will deliver it to the altar." Okay. He went. He found the Brahmana, the priest. The priest said, "What do you want?" "Oh, I need to deliver my letter of complaint." Said the Brahmana, "Well, I'm now taking my bath in Kishori Kund. I have no time, but go this way and you might find the brother of Radhika, Sridham, and he might take the letter of and deliver it." The rest of the story is very, very confidential, very nice. This is how it goes in a summary, that he comes and he is so much fixed on Radharani and must find her, I must give her the letter, that all of a sudden he meets a mysterious looking personality who introduces himself to be Sridhar, the brother, and he says, I know where you want to go, you want to see my sister, come with me. And as he follows Sridhar, the whole scenario changes and he is allowed for just a moment to glance into the eternal Vrindavan, the Vrindavan which is beyond the senses. He sees all of a sudden a scene of beautiful young ladies who sing and dance, being concentrated on a sofa. And as he enters closer, he sees that there is an umbrella under the sofa, above the sofa, and underneath the umbrella, the most beautiful personality, the most beautiful female personality, Devi, whom he has ever seen and heard about. Her eyes are very unsteady, and he looks at all her devotees with eyes full of mercy. And effulgence of like the champak flower, a gold mixture of gold and the flesh and champak flower, these three colors mixed together in her effulgence, and Radharani, she looks at him and understands immediately and says to one of her maidservants, go bring this girl to me. And the girl comes and brings the unwilling Brahmana. The Brahmana is coming close in total ecstasy with his letter. And all of a sudden, he sees that mysterious little boy who had stolen the plate and who had returned the plate with frightful eyes appearing next to Srimati Radharani. He says, don't give that letter. I'm already in trouble. Don't give the letter. And he disappears again. At this moment, he's overwhelmed and he starts to faint. And Radhika asks, so what is it what you want? And he said, it's all right. The person I had something with, he just was there. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Everyone is asking. This is how the Leela ends. Hare Krishna. He didn't deliver his letter of complaint. I wanted to tell you this following our Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj's very, very, let me say, relevant class yesterday, where Maharaj encouraged us to see the pains which we undergo and the sufferings as necessary stations on our path towards maturity and growth in spiritual life. And those of you who have heard the lecture might remember his example of the worm who needs the time and the transformation processes to grow into a beautiful butterfly. Also, the Brahmana who came to Vrindavan had to be tested by Lord Krishna. This is what he does. He gives sometimes difficulties to his devotees, but not out of mischief or out of senseless pleasure in torturing others. No, no. He wants us to grow and become mature. So this was a Leela Katha about the same subject. Let us please shout out in unison. Sri Krishna Bhagavan ki jai, Sri Radha Kunya Bihari ki jai, Sri Krishna Kali Adaman ki jai, Kau Premanandi Aryarbo.
Ajay, I want to keep hearing.
Maharaj mentioned how often people think that these pastimes just mythology. We hear about Indian mythology, Greek mythology, this mythology. Many of these super extraordinary activities are just beyond what people are able to focus on presently. So the tendency is to think it's mythological, too incredible. But we're happy, isn't it? We're happy that we are not serving an ordinary God. Sometimes there's a conception that God is just a watchman watching over things or struggling. But we realize when someone is really powerful that they're having fun. They don't have to be always concerned about every detail. As a matter of fact, they have things happening and they are in states of enjoyment. So we see that this same Krishna and how even Brahma was confused. Brahma is living so long and has so many heads and controlling so many things, helping to see that the material universe going on is occupied. And he's even wondering, how is it? This little boy running around, the cowherd boys, the cowherd kid, the calves, the little flute and face is dusty. How is this boy my boss? And so even as intelligent as he is, we know position of Brahma is one of the most intelligent entities in the material universe. But even for him, it was quite inconceivable. So we realize Ananta Sesha, with all of his heads, he can't even describe all the glories of Krishna. But we hear some of these things, and it helps us to appreciate and to be more satisfied and excited that spiritual life is not just some monotonous, mundane affair. It's not that we go to the spiritual kingdom and then we are finished. And so all of a sudden we've arrived in the spiritual world, and we think, oh, we're here. You've made it. I've made it. Okay, we're here. So what do we do? Sit down and smile and take it. We're here now. But that's not the end. That's the real beginning. Until that time, it's as if we were like sleepwalkers. And so now our real life is beginning. But take notice that as we look at religion, the conception is to go to heaven, go to the kingdom of God, to paradise. But what goes on there? You ask most people, what goes on in the spiritual world? And they'll look at you like you're somehow strange. You ask them, well, you know, what does God really do? People talking so much about God. God is great. God is good. God is love. God is omnipotent. God is omniscient. Oh, okay. But what does he really do? They don't have an idea. I do a lot of TV programs, I mentioned. Once a week in Washington and Detroit, and once a week in Michigan. I used to have my own TV show in Africa. And so one series, we had a group of leaders of different religious traditions. And so it was a national TV program. It was viewed nationally. And so I used to have a lot of fun on the TV show. And so one time we were a bishop and an imam and leader of the Baha'i movement, leader of this group, that group. And so I said, you know, we're all pursuing spiritual life, and we all recognize that there's more than just what we see, feel, touch, and taste. Our theologies all emphasize that there's a goal, and that goal we can attain perfection by going paradise, heaven, according to their theology. And we also all recognize that there is a God. There's a Godhead. And every one of us are also accepting that there is something higher than the physical. There is the soul.
They have different ideas about the soul, about the spirit. So I said, we're on national TV today. Said, if any of your theologies can explain more about the nature of the soul, the nature of God, and the nature of the kingdom that we're all supposedly trying to acquire, I said, on national TV, I will join you. And I will encourage everyone I know. I'll ask all of my disciples. I'll try to influence all of my God brothers, God sisters, every spiritual person I know in the world. I'll try to tell them, come, join this society, because they know so much about God, so much about the spiritual world, so much about the soul. You think about that. That nobody has as much information about the nature of the soul. We have this tremendous science that lets us know about who we really are, why we come into these bodies, why we continue to come into the bodies through the process of samsara. And we have the knowledge of once we're out of these bodies and we no longer have to take any kind of physical presence, what we do. Krishna consciousness is really the science of the soul in its eternal relationship with Krishna. We know so much about Krishna. Who had all these pastimes? We can go on and on and on. Every day talking about another pastime about Krishna. We know, you know, Krishna's email address, his fax number. We have the Maha Mantra. We know so many of his disguises. He comes in so many different disguises in his different incarnations. I mean, who would believe that God comes as Matsya Avatar, Kuma Avatar, Vamnadev? I mean, unbelievable. Who would ever believe that the Supreme Lord can come as a half man, half lion? But we say, why not? For the love of his devotees, for the association for his devotees, for the protection of his devotees, that Krishna will do whatever is necessary. So, or his servants also, they do so many things to bring people back to Krishna. Now when we come to the third aspect of what really happens once you are back and have achieved the ultimate goal. Well, some theologies mention you merge and you become a part of universal mind, universal intelligence, cosmic awareness. Doesn't sound so exciting to live all of our life or all of our lives where we're trying to have happiness, pleasure, relationship, and then the ultimate is that you just lose identity. It doesn't sound so exciting to hear that, okay, once you go back to God, he says, okay, I'm glad you're back. Finish. And we think, well, do we really want to go to any of those places that if that's the ultimate goal? But to hear that the ultimate goal is that all the desires you ever had, all the aspirations, everything is there perfectly. We like excitement. Krishna is full of adventure. We like opulence. We like simplicity. We like creativity. Just imagine that sometimes someone has a person to make a dress for them, to build a house, so you have an architect, you have a designer. And the person is intelligent and clever, they design something nicely. But imagine the topmost designer, the topmost architect, the topmost host. We've come here, devotees are trying to organize things, and they're being good hosts. But imagine going somewhere where the host knows everything you like, what you like to eat, how you like to sleep, what you like to see, what you want to do, and has arranged everything for you for the rest of your existence. Inconceivable. The great, powerful arrangements that's there in the spiritual kingdom. So of course when I brought up this question, first they were stunned that we would even bring such a question. But I was explaining, really we as devotees We're not just interested in just form. We're interested in how to love and to serve God. And so wherever the highest knowledge about serving the Lord, we want it. Wherever the highest understanding of who we are and what we're supposed to do, we want it. And so because of that, we find ourselves in this Krishna conscious movement. So many of you have come from Orthodoxy, from Christianity, from so many different backgrounds. And because you were serious in trying to know something about the Lord, then Krishna made himself more available. Said, you really want to know me? You really want to know me? Well, okay. Here's a Krishna book. Here's a Bhagavatam. Now are you ready for me? I'm the greatest seeder. I'm the greatest lover. I'm the greatest adventurer. I'm the greatest architect. I'm the greatest annihilator. We find, oh, Krishna is pretty heavy. Some people, when they find out how intense Krishna is, they say, oh, okay, I had enough. I read about how Krishna is controlling everything. Oh, no. I thought that I could be the controller. Many people, their idea of spirituality is how to become God. They want the kingdom of God without God. They want to be the controller. And so often, sometimes they also see that you can't cheat in Krishna consciousness. Because when you cheat, then we get some chastisement based on that. When people find out that Krishna is the greatest cheater, you cheat, you get cheated, then sometimes they decide that they don't want to pursue the process anymore. Sometimes people are going on, they're following Krishna consciousness, and they say 10, 15, 20 years, and I am not God yet. I do not have mystic power. I do not have so much realization. I don't know about this Krishna stuff. I think I'll go worship Shiva. Om Namo Shivaya. Some people are thinking like that. They make some shifts because Krishna is so genuine that we have to be genuine ourselves. It is the real God people who reach God. Otherwise, Krishna says, no problem. You want bhukti, you want mukti, you want city, here's opportunities, but it is not from bhakti. Because Swami explains how Krishna will give so many things rather easily. But when it comes to bhakti, he is giving himself. He is giving himself in full. And so therefore, we see all these amazing activities because he is the supreme personality of God here. There's personality, there's all kind of idiosyncratic tendencies, there's all kind of intriguing things. So I want to share with you one story. I'll do it interactive because you're all very tired, maybe, and keep the mind moving. We heard the story of Krishna and Rukmini. How did Krishna acquire Rukmini as his wife? Who remembers? Did he have a real formal wedding ceremony, or did he ask a friend to find him a good wife? What did he do? Okay. So she was just about to be married. Imagine the situation, huh? Someone is just about to be married, it's been all arranged, another person comes in and snatches you away and claims you. Rukmini, of course, she was always thinking of him. Now, Krishna does unusual things sometimes to enhance the love. And so there's one interesting pastime where Krishna literally agitates the hell out of Rukmini's mind. That he tells Rukmini the most unusual, and we can say absurd and devastating thing. Here he has just taken her away, and he has claimed her as his wife, and then he begins to do a whole scheme of conversation and discourse, letting her know that she made a mistake. That she should leave him, that he is not a good husband for her, that she should take another husband. She should realize that he is just a mischievous, deviant person. Now, we want to just for the next 3 minutes, we want to go to Dwarka, where we are listening in to this conversation of Krishna speaking to Rukmini, and tactfully, ironically, and jokingly trying to convince her, after she's given everything for him, after she was ready to marry, he stole her from her previous bride and claimed her, and now he is saying, go back. We made a mistake. This isn't the right relationship. So, people are divorcing for real, but maybe this was the first idea about separation, but it wasn't real separation because Krishna was just trying to increase the love and agitation. Sometimes we even have a tendency of taking things for granted. We see the person every day, we do the same thing, and one day it may not be there, and we really have to start thinking more seriously. Bodhisattva gives an example that people who live the closest to the train, they're the ones who miss the train the most. Because they think, you know, I have time. And so they wait till the last minute, and then they go for the train, and the train goes. So sometimes we can take for granted if we are not noticing closely what we are doing. So what I want to do, and I want your interaction, is to reveal or speak some of the things that Krishna said to Rukmini. And he was saying all negative things. But actually everything he said was true. So we want to look at the negative things seemingly that he was saying, but how it's actually true, and it shows how Krishna is so wonderful, and how he is so inconceivable, and how he is definitely not an ordinary God, but he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Parameshwara, and therefore all of these things apply, but in the most wonderful way, as his devotees realize how these are wonderful attributes of Krishna. So Krishna first, he says, that we are not a fit match. Krishna is telling Rukmini, he says, look, you know there's a mistake here. We are not really a fit match. And so he was saying this, of course, to be able, I'm sorry, to agitate her. Now, how is this true? That Rukmini is there, and that she is not an ordinary wife, not an ordinary mother, ordinary woman. But Krishna is telling her, look, Rukmini, we are really a good match. There, you know, some of you are married, your husband or your wife, one day says, beloved, sit down. You know, we're really not a good match. And you're giving everything in the relationship. And you have denied everything. Now your friends have left you, your parents, so much you've sacrificed for this relationship. And the person says, you know, we are really not a good match. So now Krishna is saying like this. Rukmini sees what God is the fortune. But Krishna is saying, we are not a good match. Now how is this true? But in a glorious way. Think about that. Let's hear from some of you. Yes. Yes? Someone else? That's good? Huh? But particularly that they're not equal. Why is that? How is that? Mm-hmm. Yes? This is also good, huh? Yes, but I also gave the answer, part of the answer, that nobody's equal to Krishna. And so when Krishna says, we're not an equal match, then of course we understand that ultimately, aham savasa palabho, matak savamba pati, iti matrapa jangtema, buddha bhava samamda, everything has come from him. So nothing is equal to him in force. Krishna then says, you know, I'm a coward. I'm afraid of kings. I live in Dwarka in the sea because I'm hiding out. So how do we understand, yes, that Krishna is separate. He's separating himself in such a way from the material energy, from material personalities. But how do we see this in a positive light? Krishna is saying, he isn't making fun. He says, you know, I'm living separate. I'm a coward. I don't interact, you know, with these kings. I don't interact with these things. So how do we understand that? Krishna is living in Dwarka. Is he hiding because he's really afraid? Is he hiding because he cannot cope with material nature? But he's separating himself. And how do we understand that in a positive sense? What is it about Krishna that's different from material nature? Mm-hmm. Not so difficult. There's no so much wrong answer. Mm-hmm. Yes, he's transcendental. He's transcendental to the most. Not that he is entangled. Not that he is hiding or afraid. He is transcendental, just such. Krishna says, he's telling Rukmini now, we're not a good match, and he goes on and on. He said, and I am bereft of royal power. So how do we understand that? Krishna says, he is bereft, how do you put that? He is bereft of royal power. Maybe that may be a little ambiguous. Let me go get another one, it's a little easier. Krishna says he is aimless. He is aimless. He's telling, you know, imagine now, someone is sitting down, they're telling wife, telling husband, we're not a good match, and after all, I'm a coward, after all, I'm aimless. So what is the benefit of this relationship? I am aimless. But how do we understand that? It's true, but it shows Krishna's divinity. Krishna is aimless. He's, yes? What goal can there be for, yes? Yes, he's a Samam Bonam. He is the aim. So he's not aiming at anything. He's not trying to acquire anything. Not trying to become anything. He is the supreme mystery. He is the aim. So it's true, he is aimless. People are trying to acquire him, but he is ultimately aimless. Krishna goes on, he says, this would be a heavy one in material energy. Krishna says, and I'm penniless. He says, I am penniless, or I am void of rupees, or what is the currency here? What's the currency? Puna? Quick? Kuna. So Krishna is saying, you know, this is another sign that we're not a good match. That I'm impoverished. So how do we see that? Understand that to be true, but and not in a negative sense. Yes, he owns everything, but he's saying that that he's penniless. So in another way, we want to try to look at this also. Yes, that applies for everything, for all the questions. But a little more specific. Do you think something? Yes. Yes, all of these. He owns everything. He doesn't need anything. But also, he gives himself fully to his unalloyed devotees. We understand, like in the battle of Kurukshetra, he even became a chariot driver for Arjuna. One of the reasons he had the battle fought was to put Yudhisthira Maharaj on the throne. He gives Dhruva Maharaj planet. That, or as in the Shriya days, he comes and he appears just to be able to annihilate Hiranyakashipu. So, Krishna will give everything to his devotee. So he has nothing left, he gives everything in essence. Not only do we think of controlling, owning something just for one's sovereign interest, but in the higher level, we see everyone is all for Krishna, and Krishna is all for them. Krishna says, only the beggars praise me. He said, you know, it's big trouble. We're not a match. I don't have wealth. I'm penniless in a sense. And he says, and even those who are most dear to me, they are the beggars. So he's saying, maybe I can't help you, but even look at my associates, they're beggars. So you still want to be in this marriage? You married someone who doesn't even have good contact. People who are most associated with them, they're beggars. So how do we understand that? That one is pretty simple, huh? Yes? How do we understand that the most exalted devotees are often there? They are beggars. Material energy, we see a beggar with an unfortunate person. Yes. What was your answer? I missed it. Yes, that if we are wanting so many material things, then how can we get the highest? How can we get Krishna? But Krishna is saying those who are really dear to me, they are beggars. Because they don't want anything, but they're just begging for Krishna's mercy. You said yesterday they want the highest, but they're giving up everything. And that's them. Then Krishna says, this one is just strange. He says, you should have married Jarasandha, Sisupal, other princes. Rukmini says, these are like ordinary insects. So as Krishna's giving these points, he is maintaining firmness, but obviously this is a bewildering conversation. And then last two things here, Krishna says, those who take my shelter, they spend their last days in bereavement. They are sad, very sad people. So why do we see that happen? That someone is trying, we see those devotees who often worship Lord Shiva, for instance. Shiva's Ashutosh, he rewards them, he gives them benediction. Other followers of demigods, sometimes they get different material boons, they get various powers. But then we see that often Krishna's devotees are struggling and struggling. So how do we look at that situation? Yeah. The idea, eyes of the materialist, their idea of value is totally different. Yes. Where the devas often they will give something. But they may give something that will hurt the person later. Or they give something they demand later. It's like a very wealthy person. If you know them, you can be sometimes very favored. But also because they're powerful, if you get on their bad side, they make life miserable for you. So Krishna will not give anyone something, any of his devotees, if it will be of a disturbance for them. And so in this case, sometimes the devotees of Krishna seem maybe not to have certain things because of the fact that Krishna is arranging the best things before them. And then the last one, which we're in now, because it's time for the Abhishek, Krishna says how, and after all of this that he's done to her, marrying Rukmini, kidnapping her, and now he's telling her he made a mistake, telling her she should have married Sisupal and others, telling her that she should go back, that he's penniless, that people who come to him are just, you see, beggars. And then he says, and on top of it, I'm not attached to you. Imagine sitting down and your mate is saying, you made a mistake, you're wrong, Matt, you should have married your other boyfriend, you should have married your other suitor, you should have done this, go back home, we have to cancel this whole thing, and on top of all of this, I'm not even attached to you. It'd be devastating, huh? You think, well, why are you just telling me now? And why did you enter into the relationship? So Krishna says, I'm not attached to you. Now, how is that true? But it shows again Krishna's excellence, his superhuman qualities, his position of being the all in all, controlling all things, being in everything but outside of everything. How do we understand Krishna not being attached? This is the easiest one, actually. Anyone? He is detached from everything? Yes, because, as you mentioned earlier, he is Atmaram. And so because he is Atmaram, we understand all of these attributes and characteristics, that they are true, but where they would seemingly are negative in a material sense, but they are super extraordinary in a spiritual sense. So Krishna is saying, penniless, he's giving everything, And therefore the devotee is also giving everything. And so in this way, he was enhancing the love between Rukmini and himself. Just mentioning some things about himself that seemingly were negative. But of course, he was showing that he's given everything for Rukmini, and that she has literally have given everything for him. And enhancing the sweetness of the relationship by this dynamic kind of dialogue and exchange. So we are very happy to know that God is not just some boring person. He's not just a universal mind, universal energy, universal intelligence. He's not just an old man who's looking down as a watchman, overseeing his creation. Now there's disease. Now there's war. Now there are blasphemers. But we see that he is engaged in these wonderful, wonderful, amazing pastimes. And he's inviting us all to come to participate in such pastimes. Jisivara Kunja Bihari Ki, Krishna Bhagavan Ki, Hare Krishna.